dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A woman who has been covering so many fronts in that war over such a long time is our first guest, I'm very pleased to say. She is Claudia Rosette, one of the world's preeminent investigative reporters for many years with the Wall Street Journal, but she's also contributed to numerous other publications, including the New York Times and USA Today, the Weekly Standard, and more. She is today a journalist in residence with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and a columnist for Forbes.com and PJ Media. Claudia Rosette, you are always welcome. Good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thanks, Frank.
You've covered, as I say, so many interesting beats for such a long time, notably and perhaps with greatest effect, your coverage of the United Nations and efforts by the folks there to keep bad things from happening, including the Iranian regime from obtaining nuclear weapons. We seem to be at the cusp of a deal that the President of the United States will surely trot out as a great advance in that cause. And yet I'm struck by the fact that even the United Nations Security Council's resolutions have been much more robust than what seems to be coming out of this deal with the Iranians and Washington principally. Talk about what's happened.
This is a terrible deal in the making, if it ever gets made. Iran has already done very well out of negotiating for almost a year. You know, they've been talking every month for almost the past year. The deadline for an agreement is next Monday, and the year anniversary of this interim agreement that was a framework for the talks, and it's still not clear that any actual deal is going to happen. But what's already happened is the U.S. has effectively conceded to Iran the right to enrich uranium. You know, North Korea must be jealous. In the nuclear talks where North Korea snookered the U.S. and has conducted three nuclear tests, went on to get bombs, the uranium was supposed to be taboo, with good reason. They were not allowed to enrich uranium. They went ahead and did it anyway. The Iranians are saying they have, quote, an inalienable right to enrich uranium. And the U.S., which is sort of the leader, really, in these talks, there are five other countries involved, the other members of the Security Council, plus Germany, France, Russia, the U.K., China, and us, and Germany are the negotiating partners, but the U.S. is leading. The U.S. has effectively conceded that Iran may enrich uranium. What they're haggling over is how much. Now, the difficulty of verifying this in Iran, which has gone about its nuclear program for years with secrecy, with brazen violations when it's been discovered, it has simply gone ahead, which does not allow full and complete access, is already huge. And we're setting the stage here for, if we approve the enrichment of uranium, A, Iran is collecting material it can use to further enrich to a bomb. B, a legitimate program like that, if we make it legitimate, can be, which it should not be, can become cover for importing the materials needed and so on for producing yet more secret facilities. And remember, we've discovered secret facilities in the past that Iran has been running. We don't know if we know everything today.
Well, I think it's fair to say that we don't for sure know everything that's going on there today, and not least because even the pretense of cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency has been shredded, and that's before the deal is done. This bodes poorly.
Correct.
As well.
And then there are missiles, where Iran has simply said missiles are not on the table. They're not negotiable. Now, Iran has a busy ballistic missile program, some of which it got from North Korea. And what are those missiles for, precisely? Well, our chief negotiator, Wendy Sherman, has said that in congressional testimony, well, you know, the missiles aren't a problem unless they have warheads to put on them. That's sort of like saying it's fine to leave a killer with his gun, you know, as long as you make sure he doesn't get any bullets. Well,
especially when he's busy manufacturing bullets secretly, you have every reason to believe that. Claudia, let me just turn to this because you've raised a couple of really important issues here. Wendy Sherman was, of course, the negotiator for the missile deal with North Korea. That didn't work out so well. You've written about flashbacks to that experience. Talk a little bit about Wendy Sherman and the North Korean experience and what it should tell us about what we're headed into here.
Wendy Sherman was the chief policy coordinator for North Korea during the final stretch of the Clinton administration in Bill Clinton's second term. And she was so desperate then to get a deal over missiles that she was willing to overlook, the administration was willing to overlook, but remember, she was the chief policy coordinator for North Korea, signs that North Korea was cheating on its 1994 nuclear deal. So this was by the year 2000. It was clear enough that North Korea was cheating on its nuclear deal that Bill Clinton could not certify to Congress that North Korea was in compliance with that deal. Nonetheless, he waived that requirement. He had the authority to do that. He waived that requirement in order to continue shipping them free fuel, free food, and building them these two nuclear reactors, which were promised to them under this nuclear agreement. Okay, so North Korea was cheating. Wendy Sherman was willing to ignore that in hope of getting a missile deal. Now she's willing to ignore missiles in Iran in hope of getting a nuclear deal.
This is all too familiar and all too problematic. Our guest is Claudia Rosette. She is currently with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. She is a world-class investigative reporter and has spent a lot of time making book on what is going on in North Korea and in Iran, among other places. And Claudia, just before we leave North Korea, I just wanted to ask, you've written about the hostages that were released to the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, the other day. What do you make of what the North Koreans were up to there, and why was Clapper the intermediary?
An interesting question. We don't know exactly why Clapper was the intermediary, but clearly North Korea was willing to accept him as at least part of their price for releasing these two hostages. And what it comes down to is extortion. This is North Korea's politics of extortion. They got the head of intelligence for the world superpower, if that's what the U.S. still is, we are, to come to North Korea and sit through what was apparently a very uncomfortable set of encounters in which they effectively reproached him and somewhat threatened him in order to retrieve these two people, one of whom was a missionary who displeased by the North Korean regime when he was there by doing something that I suspect the rest of the world would consider not only normal but morally correct. And the other one was a very mixed up young man who went there and reportedly wanted to have a look at their system. But we effectively already paid a ransom by sending the head of U.S. intelligence, James Clapper, over there. And that's what North Korea, at the very least, got out of this deal. They once again showed
there may
the
be
world.
More. Claudia, let me turn quickly to something with respect to the Iran deal that I really want to get your thoughts about. The president is evidently determined to do this deal, and you want it bad, you'll get it bad, as they say. He's also evidently going to blindside the Congress about it. Knowing what you do about this regime and what it's up to, do you consider that inadvisable?
It would be very inadvisable. It's, you know, it's the job of the chief executive of the president to lead foreign policy. But this is a case where what is happening is so dangerous, so wrong. This deal, this desired deal that the administration so deeply desires is so bad that anything that can be done to try and correct this course would be a good thing. And what we have is Secretary of State John Kerry saying that it's, quote, imperative that we get this deal. Well, that's a terrible way to bargain over anything. You don't walk into a rug shop and say, it's imperative I have that rug. How much do you want?
Especially with people that are all too familiar with the ways of the bazaar. Claudia, we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid. I pray, as I think you do, that the Congress at a minimum will retain the power of the purse and enable it to have a say in whether the kinds of agreements and kinds of commitments the president is making are going to be funded or not.
Well, constitutionally, we'll be watching that closely.
Yeah, that is theirs, yeah. Indeed. Claudia Rosette of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, thank you so much for joining us as always. It's great to visit with you. Keep up the good work there. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Ambassador Roger Noriega about developments south of the border and across it. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
On August 2, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors.
Dedicated to supporting the troops and their family.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star family. Retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Center for Security Policy Senior Fellow Fred Flights. With the nuclear talks with Iran possibly ending by a November 24 deadline, an important question is being ignored by the news media. Just how close is Iran to making a nuclear weapon? Well, Iran is much closer to constructing a nuclear bomb than the Obama administration will admit. Using its 9,000 uranium centrifuges, Iran could make enough nuclear fuel for one weapon in 2.2 to 3.5 months. Iran has enough reactor-grade uranium to fuel at least 7 nuclear bombs, possibly more. The agreement being negotiated with Iran reportedly will not reduce the number of bombs Tehran can construct and may only lengthen this deadline by 2 weeks. The nuclear talks amount to appeasement of Iran. Congress should therefore renounce these talks and demand a new approach that fully addresses the threat from Iran's nuclear program. This is Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by, I'm very pleased to say, Roger Noriega, former U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States and former Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. He's a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and a driving force behind a terrific web resource entitled InterAmericanSecurityWatch.com. Roger, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Frank.
I want to ask a couple of questions about Cuba. Let's start with, why would it be that the nations of Latin America would want Cuba to be among their company at the Summit of the Americas next spring? This is something that hasn't been done, I guess, in the past over particularly American objections. It falls, I guess, on the heels of many of these nations deciding they wanted Venezuela to represent them at the United Nations Security Council. What is going on in our hemisphere in that regard?
Well, at one point, we aspired to the highest common values in the Americas as we promoted an agenda that was important to U.S. stability and security. And now it's the lowest common denominator with Cuba and Venezuela kind of calling the shots. Some countries in the region just don't want to fight with Cuba. And they don't want them muddling around in their internal affairs, so they throw them a bone diplomatically. That's been the case for decades, frankly, and it's now coming to a head because you now have a clique of countries that are really essentially managed by Cuba and its foreign policy. And so they're putting it right in the United States' face by insisting that the Americas invite them to the next summit. And there's a consensus in the region, and in characteristic fashion, the Obama administration is already flying the white flag, saying they won't resist this urge. It says that there's not enough constructive things to talk about on that inter-American agenda, and that's really a shame on U.S. foreign policy, in my opinion.
We're talking with Roger Noriega, currently a visiting fellow with the American Enterprise Institute and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. And Roger, speaking of Cuba, on your website, interamericansecuritywatch.org, you've posted an interesting piece about Cuba engaging in slave trading in doctors. We've heard for years that one of the great accomplishments of Cuban socialism is their healthcare system, and that they're exporting it to the rest of the world has been a great boon to other nations that were not able to have decent health care. This puts a very different cast on what's afoot there.
Well, it's an extraordinarily clever tactic of Fidel Castro's to generate this medical diplomacy because he sends these doctors and nurses, really even the doctors are basically glorified medics, into underdeveloped parts of countries. Local governments use it as a boon in terms of boosting their own popularity, that they're able to cover health services in certain neglected areas of the country. But a lot of times these folks are, stirring up trouble. I remember when Francisco Flores ousted a bunch of these Cuban relief workers after an earthquake there because he found them stirring up political trouble. In other cases, they're collecting intelligence. But the most important objective, really, is to garner currency for hard currency where governments like Venezuela or Brazil even pays the Venezuelan regime pennies on the dollar for the services of these people. By the way, their families are never able to travel with them, so they're essentially held hostage to prevent the doctors or discourage the doctors from defecting.
Roger, I'm told that this garners something on the order of $7.6 billion per year for a cash-strapped economy like Cuba's. That's a lot of money, needless to say.
Well, that number would be sort of equivalent to what the Soviet Union was providing them at one time.
Roger, speaking of the Soviet Union, one of the things that we're hearing a bit about these days is that the Russians are going to be sending bear bomber, long-range strategic bombers into the Caribbean and into the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know whether they'll be staging through either Cuba or Venezuela or possibly both, but that seems likely. This comes as a report hit Family Security Matters website today in which it reports that a bear bomber in the Black Sea last April, which overflew a U.S. Navy vessel, an Aegis destroyer by the name of the Cook, was actually exposed to electromagnetic pulse or some other kind of electronic warfare that not only jammed but took down its missile defense systems and its radar and other electronic signals capabilities, essentially rendering the ship unable to perform its mission. What is it that the Russians are hoping to do with these kinds of overflights in our region, would you say, specifically in the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico?
Well, it's projecting its power right into our neighborhood, putting a thumb in the eye of U.S. national security apparatus. Even during the Cold War, the Russians did fly these strategic bombers into the Gulf of Mexico, for example. So this is a provocation, quite frankly, and again, it shows the absolute nadir of U.S. influence and projecting its own power in its own neighborhood.
Well, and we've seen U.S. Spokesmen repeatedly downplaying the significance of these kinds of overflights and the Alaskan airspace, even in California up to this point. So they're presumably the Russians responding with still more provocations. Roger, before we leave Cuba, very quickly, the Havana has also been protecting the North Koreans at the United Nations from a referral that's been recommended to the International Criminal Court for North Korea's barbaric abuse of human rights. Not surprising that these birds of a feather would flock, but what are the implications of this action?
Well, it's, you know, an adage in New York that Cuba essentially runs the United Nations, and there's very little. They put a lot of stock in that international diplomacy right here in New York. They're able to project their influence and sort of rally the worst offenders of human rights to the side of regimes like that of North Korea and other monstrous regimes.
No good can come of it, that's for sure. Roger, lastly, I do want to turn to Mexico. Very serious developments there, notably in Guerrero province, where students have been kidnapped and apparently executed. This seems to be a new and accelerating decline in the security situation in Mexico. Talk a little bit about it in our important neighbor to the south, but also what it might mean if, as President Obama sets about putting an amnesty in place that would serve as a magnet for more people to come across our border, what the implications might be of that.
Well, everybody wished Enrique Peña Nieto well when he set out on this economic reform agenda to modernize Mexico. But some of us were concerned and warned that he wasn't paying significant attention to the declining or rather persistent security challenges. And now this atrocity occurs in Guerrero, which most Americans will know is the state where Acapulco is, where 43 students were disappeared, essentially, by officials of the local government there. It's a real scandal, and the government of Mexico is scrambling to respond to this challenge, and they're going to be hard-pressed to deal with tens of thousands of Central Americans who might be drawn into their territory on a long march to amnesty in the United States. So I think the president, again, with these political tantrums, doesn't understand the extraordinary implications and the damage that he does to our interests, to our security, and quite frankly, to the people who are victims of this magnet.
Well, unless he does understand those, Roger, which is another very, very troubling possibility. We'll look forward to visiting with you about that perhaps on another occasion soon. Roger Noriega of the American Enterprise Institute, thank you so much for joining us. Next up, Colonel Thomas Snodgrass joins us. We'll talk about Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey with friends like those. Do we need enemies? Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Another American has been beheaded by global jihadists associated with the Islamic State. This time, it was an aid worker in Syria who converted to Islam in captivity. Evidently, neither helping Muslims nor adopting their faith trumps the offense of being an American. On Saturday, there was another signal development regarding the jihadists. The United Arab Emirates published a list of dozens of Muslim groups it has designated as terrorist organizations. Interestingly, among them were two American fronts for the Muslim Brotherhood, the Council on American-Islamic Relations and the Muslim American Society. Both groups are indignant and demanding their names be removed. But the Brotherhood is an organization that has spawned virtually every Islamic terrorist group and that shares their goals. Those associated with it are jihadists, too. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm pleased to say, joined, I believe, for the first time by Colonel Thomas Snodgrass. He is a retired United States colonel in the Air Force of this country, having served for some 30 years with great distinction as a military intelligence officer, also a specialist in political military affairs, as a military attaché, and a strategy instructor in several of the prestigious schools of our armed forces, including the Air Force Special Operations School and the U.S. Air Force Academy. Colonel Snodgrass is today a blogger with Right Side News. You can catch up with his commentaries there at rightsidenews.com. Colonel, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here. Nice to be talking to you.
I wanted to start with the evidence that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is still among the land of the living. He is, of course, the caliph, self-described, of the Islamic State. Apparently had a near brush with some American ordnance in a recent attack we engaged in, and has promised in response volcanoes of jihad. I'd like to ask you about a couple of pieces of his declaration of war, if you will, notably the most recent beheading of this aid worker, Peter Kassig, but also his threats to Shiite Muslims, that's no surprise, and to the Saudi royal family. Talk about all that, if you would.
Yes, al-Baghdadi has already promised that he'll be in New York, as you probably are aware, when he was released from U.S. custody for what seems to me still unexplained reasons. Regarding al-Baghdadi's enemies, He is in competition with Al-Qaeda for leadership of the Sunni, the Salafist Sunni jihad movement on the one hand, and that would include al-Nusra there in Syria. And at the same time, he is also in contention with the Saudi royal family, which is more of a, which are Wahhabis, and also fit into the Salafi camp, but they are more for a slow infiltration of their target, as they have done in the United States, using petrodollars to finance mosques, which are really jihadist meeting centers and training camps. So al-Baghdadi feels that the Saudis are not actually in the tradition of Muhammad, are not adhering to it as closely as he would, and therefore he wants to take over the custodianship of the mosques at Mecca and Medina and so forth, and get rid of this slow approach and more or less adopt the blow 'em up approach. Al-Baghdadi, in addition to his vendetta, his jihad against the Sunni Saudi royal family, also consider the Shia as his enemy, and particularly the Khomeiniist Shia in Iraq, which are also in competition with him for leadership of the Islamic Jihad movement. And so really what is driving al-Baghdadi is his wanting to take over the leadership on the Sunni side from al-Zawahiri, and on the other side from the Shia, who they feel, who he feels is not really a bona fide Islamic practitioner.
So what we're dealing with here, clearly, as you've suggested, is a guy who aspires to be the leader of the global jihad. But a point that seems to be missing in the minds of a lot of American policymakers, Colonel Tom Snodgrass, is that we're up against a global jihad in the first place. We're being sort of told we're going to go fight, defeat and degrade and all the rest of it, this group, the Islamic State. But the rest of them seem to be not getting the kind of attention that they should indeed receive. Notably, you've written about the unreliability of, in addition to the Saudis, the Qataris and the Turks. Talk, if you would, a bit about how prudent it is to make them mainstays of our effort to, degrade and defeat the Islamic State, or for that matter, deal with the Islamic's ambition for a global jihad more generally.
Yes, the Qataris, on one hand, are playing a double game, and they're doing it very skillfully by allowing us to have military facilities in their country from which to stage operations. But at the same time, the people that we are trying to eradicate are getting funding from the Qataris. So, and that is really where their true interests lie. They are using us and our reliance on their basing in order to make it seem like they are on our side, but really it's if you think about it, if they are sending money to the people that we're trying to kill, then they're not our enemies or allies. Now, on the other hand, the Turks, that's a very sad story, but it's a very instructive story that for people who believe in moderate Islam and the fact that Islam can live hand in glove with the secular world. Ataturk had decades and decades, about seven of them at least, to attempt to secularize the Turkish way of thinking, and it is Erdogan is taking it right back to where it was in the into the Ottoman type of thinking.
Clearly has his own aspirations for a caliphate, it would seem. Colonel Snodgrass, let me turn quickly to sort of the money issue. The president is apparently casting about for a new strategy for dealing with the Islamic State, his advisors, and this coalition, which includes, as you say, some folks who really seem to be on the other side, are spending a lot of executive time sorting things out. Do you believe that it is possible for them to come up with a strategy that would be effective against even the Islamic State, let alone the larger global jihad, if they don't understand that what we're up against is fundamentally this Sharia-driven agenda and global adherence to it, not just this latest franchise to turn up and start beheading people?
The short answer to your question is it is impossible. Now, the policy or the strategy that the Obama regime is following is purely reactive and is purely driven by politics. In other words, they have a flare up of jihadist violence, whether here in the United States or in the Middle East, in Jihadistan, as I call it. The you have this a tendency just to do as little as possible in order to silence your political critics. It's purely driven. It's purely about politics. And the problem on our side is that we have people who are not very smart, who are advocating things that for Obama to do, to be more aggressive in his reactive policies rather than taking a long-term view. And the long-term view is that if you look at the, whether it be the Iranian nuclear development program or lone wolf terrorism in New York, it all stems from the Quran. It is a strictly an Islamic problem, and we need to recognize that our enemies are both Shia and Sunni, and we cannot win in any kind of civil war between them, so we should stay out of it.
We should indeed. Colonel Tom Snodgrass, thank you for all of these insights into the nature of the challenge that we're facing and the mistakes we're making along the trail. This is the kind of information that I think all of us, particularly our leaders, need to be taking aboard and hopefully factoring into course corrections. A new strategy is needed, all right, but not the kind that the administration seems to be preparing to come up with, blinded as it is to these realities of the nature of Sharia and its adherence. We thank you for your work you're doing today, Colonel at Right Side News, rightsidenews.com, and your past service to our country, both in uniform and out. Keep it up. Come back to us again, if you would, soon, sir. Next up, Gordon Chang joins us. We'll take stock of what the president's been up to in Asia and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today,
all right, let's go,
or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we have the privilege of being each week by Gordon Chang, one of our country's foremost thinkers, monitors, and analysts of what is going on in Asia. You can find Gordon's writings at Forbes.com. He has a weekly column there. Also at World Affairs Journal. He blogs there and myriad other places, including the Daily Beast. We're always delighted to have him with us here to shed light on what is happening, particularly against the backdrop of some important meetings that are taking place in Asia this week. Gordon, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, as always.
Thank you so much, Frank.
So the three Bs, Beijing, Burma, and Brisbane, have been the sites of events featuring President Obama and his counterparts from Russia, China, and elsewhere in Asia. Talk about what you make of the meetings to date.
I think the most important thing is it showed how close China and Russia actually are. Because on the eve of the first of those Beijing, we saw a deal announced between China and Russia for the sale of gas from Western Siberia. And that's important because that is a major gas deal when it's finally put in place with all the details. It comes on the heels of the October deal on oil and the May deal on gas. And also there was a smaller oil deal also announced on the eve of the APEC summit, Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Beijing. You know, it was very interesting to see the way Chinese President Xi Jinping greeted President Obama in Beijing before the APEC summit. It was correct. It was friendly. I mean, it was diplomatic. But when Xi Jinping met Vladimir Putin, it was very, very warm, slapping on the back, very familiar. And I think that that really symbolizes how close Moscow and Beijing are these days and how difficult relations are between the Chinese and us.
And to the extent that President Obama has been trying to woo the Chinese away from the Russians, notably an energy partnership that, as you've reported, Gordon, is burgeoning at the moment, it seems to be at the very least complicated by points of contention between the United States and China.
People were surprised at the number of agreements that the United States came to with China at the first of those bees in Beijing. There was an agreement on military confrontations at sea and in the air. There was a visa deal. Most importantly, there was an agreement on tariffs on high-tech goods. And then, of course, the climate agreement or climate announcement. I think, though, that we have seen in the past many announcements of agreements between between Beijing and Washington, and they have not turned out as everyone had hoped. Part of it is because the Chinese are not able to honor their commitments to the United States and to the international community. So although many people were very heartened by what they saw in Beijing, I think that we have to wait a few months to see how this actually plays out, because the Beijing people are very good at making agreements. They're not very good at complying with them. And I think because of the political distress right now in Beijing, it makes it even more difficult for them to comply with their obligations that they've undertaken.
Speaking of obligations, one of the things that, of course, in the larger Asian sphere that has supposedly been promised, not by the Chinese in this case, is the Russian promise to diffuse some of its tensions with Ukraine. And yet we're told by both, I think, reliable press sources, some in the Ukraine government, and also, I think, General Philip Breedlove from NATO, that there are tank columns going into Ukraine. You've written, Gordon, that China is actually funding Russia's aggression through these energy deals. Talk a little bit about the extent of those energy deals and the implications of them.
Well, you know, we're seeing two things at the same time. First of all, there's increased Russian aggression. And at the same time, we see this developing energy alliance, as it's called, between the Chinese and the Russians. And so clearly the Chinese are financing Russia's ambitions. Got to remember that Russian economy right now is in serious trouble. It grew 1.3% last year, which was below every consensus estimate. This year, if it's lucky, it'll grow the 0.2% that the IMF sees. And I don't think that they're going to even be able to manage that. Clearly, you have oil prices now at a three-year low, with the Saudis apparently driving the price of oil even further lower. And that, of course, is going to hurt Russia's economy, which is dependent on the sale of hydrocarbons. So the Russians need the Chinese right now. And the Chinese like the Russians because Putin says what the Chinese would like to say. Putin does what the Chinese would like to do, and the Chinese are able to stay in the background. So I think that what they're doing is they're giving Putin the ability to be the aggressive that he wants to be, and so the Chinese can then disrupt the international system from a safe distance.
I'd like to just ask you, Gordon Chang, again as our guest. He's a columnist with Forbes.com. You see him frequently at Fox News and in myriad other outlets. Your thoughts on China's ambitions. I had on the show recently a guest considerable knowledge about the Chinese military program. This is Rick Fisher, of course. He talked about sort of three phases that are at work at the moment, Gordon. One, the present one of trying to dominate the Western Pacific and Asia. The second being more broadly a global power projection capability, a superpower, if you will. And the third phase, which he envisions would begin sometime after 2020, of trying to dominate what he described as the Earth-Moon domain. Do you regard those as actually what China is up to, and how ominous are those three prospects?
I agree with Rick Fisher. Rick has consistently been right about the direction of China's military modernization, where many people in Washington were much more optimistic that the Chinese really wanted only a brown water navy. They weren't interested in dominating their region. Rick has been consistently sending out this warning, and he's been consistently right. All we have to do is look at what the Chinese are in fact doing to see that Fisher actually has got this correct, because you can see Chinese moves in all three of these areas right now as they try to put their stamp on space and on the near satellite orbits. This is going to be very dangerous for the United States, which relies on its satellites for its military. We could end up not only with useless destroyers, planes, whatever, we could also end up with our weapons directed against us, which is what Fisher talks about. And these are important things for us to wrap our minds around, because the Chinese have indicated that they want to dominate everything.
China also signed two deals with President Obama while he was there. Let's talk a little bit about them, involving air and sea incidents that might arise even more in the future as a result of these ambitions of China, Gordon. And secondly, a greenhouse gas emission agenda. Talk about both, if you would, quickly.
The agreement on confrontations at sea and in the air really is meaningless, because the only reason why there are confrontations is because the Chinese are causing them. And these confrontations will stop not because we have an agreement, but because the Chinese want them to stop. Now, I don't think the Chinese are ever going to want them to end, so I think that these agreements are not important at all. With regard to the climate agreement, it's a very complex subject, but the problem here is the asymmetry in obligations, where the United States agrees to do something by 2025, which is at least a 26% reduction in greenhouse emissions off of the 2005 levels, where China doesn't have to do anything until 2030 or even later than that, and it has a real incentive to increase its carbon emissions in the interim, so as to create a much higher base for 2030 or later. This is a real failure on the part of the United States. And even if you think a climate deal is a good thing, what we've done is we've used all our leverage, so it's going to be much harder to get a climate deal in Paris next year when everyone meets for that purpose.
Just a perfect paradigm of a very, very poorly conducted and thought through, for that matter, policy on the part of the Obama administration. Gordon, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you very much for your time, the work you do at Forbes and World Affairs Journal, as well as, of course, Fox News. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afty. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.